All right, well, let's thank Benny for his talk. While Connie, or Dr. Shirley, is putting on her microphone, she's going to talk about a problem that's pretty prevalent in the western part of the United States, especially Colorado and the mountain states, and that's high altitude disease. And her and Dr. Garrett have been doing a fair bit of research as far as different methodologies to evaluate high altitude disease and how we can use those to maybe give us some new selection tools to decrease the incidence of that disease. A little bit of background about Dr. Shirley. She's got her PhD with Dr. Milton Thomas, who many of you know, from New Mexico State University, and then came with us. He's been with Colorado State for 2 years. 2 years as a postdoc. A little story about Connie. I used to live in Arizona, and I missed good Mexican food and chilies. And Connie went back to New Mexico State and picked us up a load of green chilies and brought them back. And I cook with those like I normally cook with the stuff I buy in the grocery store here. First time I tried it, my forehead was sweating. And so once I got that back, dialed back down, and were something I didn't have a forehead sweating. They were excellent chilies. I'm not sure where she got them, but we're already going to order them for next year. So anyway, Dr. Shirley, have at it.
Thank you, Dr. Enns. Welcome, everybody. Today, I'd like to go through what we've been working on in terms of high altitude disease. I've been working on this project as well as my advisor, Dr. Garrick. To begin, high altitude disease is also known as high mountain disease or brisket disease. It's characterized as non-infectious cardiopulmonary disease. It's characterized by hypertrophy or enlargement of the right ventricle. Now, physical signs of this or symptoms that you would observe are edema or swelling of the chest or brisket area. The incidence rate for this particular disease is fairly low in cattle that are native to high altitude areas greater than, say, 5,000 feet. For those cattle that are not native to these areas, the incidence rate is variable from 10 to 40% of animals will be affected with this disease when they're moved to the higher pastures during the summer grazing season. Here I found a picture of two right ventricles from a paper by Blake in 1965. These are two animals that are roughly about the same age, 18 and 17 months of age. On the left, we have the right ventricle from an animal that is not affected with brisket disease. On the right, we have an animal that has a very enlarged right ventricle. As you can see here, the right ventricle is almost twice the size of an animal without the disease. Pulmonary arterial pressure is a measure of blood flow resistance to the heart. It is a reliable predictor of an animal's susceptibility to brisket disease, where animals with higher PAT measurements have higher resistance to blood flow. Therefore, you don't want to select those animals. You want the animals with the lower PAP scores. Now, there is a test for brisket disease using PAP measurements. An article in the Angus Journal came out in 2000, and there they talked about the PAP test, which is conducted by Dr. Tim Holt here in Fort Collins. The article was written about the Tybar Ranch, and the test costs $10 to $18 per test, and it takes about 2 minutes. Dr. Holt is very skilled at this, so it only takes 2 minutes to get the catheter through the jugular vein to the heart, measure the blood pressure, and pull that catheter back out. So it should only take 2 to 3 minutes tops. This test is reliable in animals that are greater than a year of age. Also, for those animals, in order to be tested, they should be exposed to altitudes greater than 5,000 feet for a period of time. Breed, illness, and vaccination it should be considered because these factors could affect the outcome of the test. So you could get a test that shows that an animal has a high PAP score when they really shouldn't have that because of, say, they were just recently vaccinated. A breakdown of the different PAP scores is seen here. where at the very top with low PAP scores, 30 to 35, these scores are excellent scores. They're low, which is what you want to see, and they're very reliable. So animals with scores in this range should not develop high brisket disease once they're moved to higher pastures. The next grouping is 36 to 40. That is an excellent score for animals greater than 12 months of age, but animals less than 12 months of age should be retested. We have scores less than 41 in general are reliable for animals greater than a year of age. The next grouping, 41 to 45, are acceptable for animals greater than 6 months of age, but calves younger than this should also be retested. 45 to 48 are acceptable for animals greater than 6 months of age. These animals can be kept at high altitudes for extended period, but there is some risk that these animals will develop brisket disease. Finally, scores greater than 49, animals are at higher risk and they will develop brisket disease. So what this looks like, what this tells me is that at the extremes, 30 to 35 and greater than 49, these are reliable scores, but it's this region in here that looks to be a little less reliable. So are animals with a score of 36, are they better than, say, an animal with a score of 41? And on the other hand, are animals with a 41 better than a score of 48? So there's this region in here that we're not quite sure of if there really is, if an animal with a score of 36 is actually better than an animal with a score of 48. So this leads us into the objectives of what we are looking at in terms of this particular study. We want to answer two questions. Is there a maternal component to PAP? And two, is the heritability of PAP different using scores that are either continuous or on a binomial distribution? Data for this experiment was graciously given to us by the Tybar Ranch in Carbondale, Colorado. PAP scores, body weights were provided to us, while the pedigree information was provided by the American Angus Association. There were a little over 2,000 animals born between 1984 and 2003, and pedigree information included 132 sires and almost 800 dams. Birth weight and adjusted 205-day weaning weight was used with PAP scores. Again, PAP scores were collected by one veterinarian, Dr. Tim Holt. Procedures are outlined in Ahola et al. In 2006. The age of PAP measurement ranged from about 180 days to 200 days, 330 days. So that's about 6 to 11 months of age for these calves. Again, PAP scores were looked at on a continuous and in terms of a binomial distribution. So to go over that, PAP scores range from about 20 to 120 for this particular data set. The mean was about 39.8. This, for a continuous scale, we're looking at all these scores within this range. When we look at a binomial distribution, say here at the mean at about 40, anything less than 40 is given a 1. Anything greater than 40 is given a 0. So instead of looking at PAP scores over a continuous scale, we're looking at PAP scores of those that are lower than 40 versus those that are higher than 40. Then we can do the same thing because there's that area from about 38 to about 40 that is variable, or 46 that is variable. So we could also do this, again, at PAP score of 35 and PAP score at 45. So for our fixed effects, several papers have come out, particularly from Colorado State, that looked at PAP and its relationship with other growth traits such as birth weight and adjusted weaning weight. Some of those fixed effects for PAP include age of dam, a year sex contemporary group where we combined both the year and the sex of that animal, and the age of PAP we use as a covariate. Results show that all of the fixed effects were significant except for age of dam. In terms of the maternal component, when we're looking at the data analysis for the continuous data set, Pat was not significant, or Pat Maternal was not significant. And to emphasize this, Pat Maternal had a heritability that was close to zero. When we looked at it in terms of the binomial distribution, where we either had ones or zeros for cutoff measurements at Pat 35, Pat 40, or Pat 45, that shows that there is a maternal component to this. So the heritabilities for PAP, when we look at it on a continuous scale, PAP has a heritability of 0.34. This is similar to the work that has come out of our department. And in our department, the heritability scores range from about 3.3 to about 0.37. So we're pretty much within that range. Just to show you again, there is no maternal heritability on a continuous scale. When we look at it in terms of binomial distribution for PAP 35, PAP 40, and PAP 45, we have the direct component heritability, the maternal component heritability, and the genetic correlation between the two. We see here that at PAP 40, our heritability is similar to the heritability of the PAP scores when we analyze it on a continuous basis. So what this means is that there is a maternal effect. So the mama cow does have an effect on PAP, but how we can explain that biologically, still haven't quite done that yet. Second, PAP 40 seems to be our cutoff. So that anything less than 40 or anything greater than 40, that may be a better way of analyzing our PAP data. So instead of looking at it on continuous scale, we may be able to look at it on a binomial scale and still get the same heritability and perhaps the same EPDs for this score than when we did it with a continuous scale. And then finally, the next step would be to see if we can do a multi-trait analysis and see how PAP is affected or affects other traits such as birth weight or weaning weight. So with that, I'll be able to take any questions.
Thanks, Connie. Any questions for Connie?
No. Maybe you didn't listen closely enough, but the cattle that were in your data set, were they all maintained at high altitudes?
Yes, they were.
Continuously?
Yes, they were. When they were tested, they were taken up.
And the dams of those cattle in the data set as well were at high altitudes?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
So if we went, we'll put you on the spot, Connie. Huh? If we went to a binary scale, so we had an either animal fails the PAP test or is successful through the PAP test, you show that there's a maternal effect. Do we need maternal PAP EPDs?
Probably not, because if you're just looking at whether that animal will pass it or not pass it, then I would say no.
More questions for Connie? Okay. Oh, sorry, Mark had one. Just a second.
Connie, I don't know whether you have, you probably looked at the data that you guys have submitted back to us, but in our herd, we do have specific cows that do have a negative genetic trend, and they have a PAP score of over 40. And we were thinking at one time that we would be able to decrease our genetic value line over our whole herd if we eliminated some of those cows. We have not done that because we've been in the research program with you. We've been trying to figure out, like you, what's been going on with this. What's your opinion?
I think that with the cows you said had a negative genetic trend,
let me paraphrase that. I'm not, maybe I understand what Mark's asking. He's asking, should you get rid of the females, right, that have the negative PAP, EPD, meaning they're better? Is that what you're asking? Because of the negative relationship between maternal and direct. But they have an actual score of over 40. So I think he's looking at the you had a negative, what was it, negative 0.32 genetic correlation between direct effects and maternal effects. Would he make headway by getting rid of those cows that seem to have that negative maternal environment?
I think the important thing to realize is there's a difference between phenotype and genotype. So this trait, we're saying, has a heritability of something like 30%. So the score itself tells you about the phenotype of the animal, but from a breeding point of view, we're interested in the genotype of the animal. So what we're saying from the data analysis is it's not the actual PAP score that matters. It's just whether the animal has a phenotype that is below 40 or above 40 is the informative information. So what you want to know is, for a particular sire that has a number of offspring, how many of its offspring are below 40 versus how many of its offspring are above 40? That's going to tell you something about the genotype of the bull. And you might find that the bull with the best genotype, he might actually have a PAP that's, say, 41. So his phenotype is bad, but his genotype is actually good. So the data, looking at individual PAP scores and millimeters of mercury, we're kind of used to using those, because when we look at something like weaning weight, if you have a weaning weight of say, 300 pounds or 350 pounds or 250 pounds, you use every piece of information. A difference of 1 pound is informative, whether it's comparing to between 250 and 251 or 350 and 351. What we're seeing with PAP is if the PAP is elevated, it really doesn't matter what particular score it was you measured, because the measurement seems to be unreliable in an animal with elevated PAP. Okay, so bear in mind, phenotype and genotype are different things in terms of the value of the measurement. The principal information is whether it's above 40 or below 40, and then you want to do a genetic analysis looking at the proportion of offspring that are above 40 or below 40 to work out the genotype of the animal. So I wouldn't make a recommendation about whether an animal was particularly good just because it happened to be 39 or 41. What you need to do is do a blood type analysis of their phenotype scored as 0 or 1 according to whether they were above or below, and then choose the animals that have the highest EPDs for that threshold trait. So it's just like calving scores, right? It's the score that's important, not the particular millimeters of mercury.
Thanks, Ori. Any other questions for Connie? Dwayne.
Can you tell me if there would be a difference then the cattle that you were studying were tested at 6,500 feet elevation, if I remember reading that right. Would the cast show a difference if you took them to a higher or a lower altitude?
Anything lower than your PAP score would probably not be very reliable. Anything higher, it'd probably be a little bit of the same, where it's not very reliable. You could probably get away with them at a little bit higher altitude, but anything greater than that, animals that will get it usually go downhill really fast. So whether or not to test them at that higher altitude, you may not have enough time to test them before they get sick.
Okay, let's thank Connie.